Well, good morning to you all. I am less high-tech than Matthew, and so mine are all printed on paper here. It's new papyrus stuff. I have given up clay tablets. I thought about how confusing it is to have two of the speakers named John. Now, one of us has an H in his name and the other doesn't, but it's hard to tell when you're talking about the person which you're talking about. So I'm going to be talking about dealing with false information or misinformation or disinformation. I don't know what the difference really between all these things is. And the only reason why you're getting this talk is because I am the opposite of whatever a procrastinator is. So John had messaged me and asked me if I would speak, and he suggested, well, maybe this would be a good subject to speak on. And so I just said, well, sure. And then I went ahead and made a talk. And then he messaged me and said, oh, here's a brochure, and it had a different subject. So anyway, I said, well, is there any way I could just go ahead and give this other talk during this weekend, because I've made it, and I can't imagine giving this talk in my church. And so anyway, so that's why we're here this morning. So I apologize for taking away your small group time. So in 1992, a man by the name of William Lane, who apparently has a PhD in something non-medical, released a book called Sharks Don't Get Cancer. And I'm not certain if any of you have read this book. How many of you have read this book? Wow, it's like a black hole out there. So I don't know that you need to read the book. The main information about the book seems to be in the title, which is that sharks don't get cancer. And he had this postulate that there's some kind of amazing cancer inhibitor in sharks that keeps them from getting cancer. And strangely enough, his son, Andrew Lane, ran a company called Lane Laboratories that sold shark cartilage to willing people who bought it. And it was supposed to help prevent cancer. And I mention this book because I don't think any of us go to churches where this is a problem. But it was a problem at one point. And more than that, even if you believe that sharks don't get cancer, which they do get cancers, it is a really odd thing to believe that eating sharks would prevent you from getting cancer, even if the sharks don't get it. So I read one scientist talking about it, and he said, you know, this is almost like believing that eating Michael Jordan would turn you into a good basketball player. Not a good idea. So if sharks don't get cancer, or get cancer at a lower rate than humans, what scientists should do is they should figure out what it is that keeps sharks from getting cancer and see if humans take that same thing, if it would give the same effect. So it's not just Anabaptists who struggle with believing false medical information. I've had plenty of patients over the last several years who were certain that Dr. Fauci was a horrible person, that ivermectin was what they needed to help them get over COVID. I had a patient just this last week, this is not a medical thing, but she said, Dr. Waldron, you know that sleet we had last week, which I remembered it. It was kind of challenging to move in my driveway. And she said, it wasn't real sleet. I said, really? This was news to me. It looked like real sleet. She said, it was government's precipitation. And she had seen a video of somebody who got a bucket of it and set fire to it. And you can't do that with real sleet. And she even saw somebody who apparently had taken a blowtorch to their yard and it just all went up in smoke. Now, I don't know if that was AI stuff or what it was, but she was convinced. And I, you know what? I did not argue with her. I said, that's terrible. The things our government does. So the question, though, is, why do people buy into this? You know, in the old days, people would come around in a little wagon and they would sell snake oil or whatever it was, and whatever they were selling was perfect for whatever ailed you. But these days, people have websites and they're polished and they look great. So a lot of the reason why people buy into this stuff is because they need to feel in control. So I don't know how much you all have had to navigate the healthcare system as a patient, not as a healthcare worker, but as a patient. And it is challenging, particularly if you don't have insurance. Everything costs too much, and you don't know how much it costs until you get the bill. And caregivers often don't seem focused on your care. They are focused on filling out papers and having you sign things, and you know, they just don't seem like they care. And the beautiful thing about books like Natural Cures That They Don't Want You to Know About by Kevin Trudeau is that they purport to convey to you special secret knowledge that avoids this healthcare system that's full of traps. So gnosis, or knowledge, is the key, right? And so when my vehicle starts to make a funny noise, I take it to this magician called a mechanic, and I'll ask him to look at it. And if he says, you know, your blinker fluid is low, or your exhaust manifold needs a new defibrillator, I will nod my head and say, how much will that be? And I think that's exactly what people do when they come into my office. They have something bad going on. And they have not been through 4 years of medical school. They have not done a residency in anything. And so they need someone to help them navigate what's going wrong with their body that's not supposed to be going on right now. And we, you know, people have talked about doing your research. And I don't know what that even means necessarily, but when you do your research, if you Google terrible effects of vaccines, you're going to get different results than if you Google why do we have the current vaccine schedule we have. And so even doing your research will give you different kinds of results. And we all know this. So there's a general distrust of authority. And I think it's amusing, but even Anabaptist people have this. When you distrust the experts, you have to accept the opinions of people who are not experts. And I read a book recently called In COVID's Wake. Have any of you all read that book? Well, I wouldn't recommend it. It's too long. But one of the amusing recommendations at the end of this book was that in the future, when we deal with pandemics, we should have two panels, okay? So one of the panels would be the experts, and they'll make recommendations. And then the other panel will be of non-experts. And then we'll also have them make recommendations. And then I'm not sure how you would sort out which ones to take. But the idea was that the main qualification for the second panel is that you don't have any qualifications, which seems really weird. But if you distrust authority enough, you begin to turn to people who do not have authority for input. So is there a shadowy cabal of individuals who are sitting out there and are protecting us from cancer cures? And I think it's unlikely, and most of the reason why it's unlikely is because there'd have to be enough people who would know about this that it would get out. But you know, if you believe that, then it's easy to think, you know, the big pharma is keeping people from getting better from stuff that they could get better from. Another thing is that a lot of people have experienced trauma through the healthcare system. So there are lots of people who have spent large amounts of money on the healthcare system. They have had procedures done. I could tell you lots of stories from people who have had multiple back surgeries and are not better, they're worse, and it's a little bit like the woman with the issue of blood where she had spent all her living on doctors and she wasn't better, she was worse. All they have is new scars to show for what they've been through. And maybe a final thing is that there's a sense of community with this disinformation. So conspiracy theorists band together. So this is particularly true today. So Matthew is talking about community. People need community. So if you have alpha-gal, do any of y'all know what alpha-gal is? Yes, some of you do. So alpha-gal is something that people in Virginia and other parts of the country get after they get bitten by the Lone Star tick. And so if you get bitten by the Lone Star tick and it's the wrong Lone Star tick, you can end up being allergic to any mammalian meat. So that's venison and beef and pork. And if it's bad enough, it can be like trace amounts of things that are like in gelatin and things like that. So if you have alpha-gal, or you have Lyme disease, or you have rheumatoid arthritis, you can find a bunch of people like yourself who are dealing with the same sorts of things that you are dealing with. And they will provide support for you in a way that you do not get from your local church community. So for whatever reason, church groups are really good at providing support for acute problems. So if you have to get your appendix out, or your gallbladder out, or you have a baby removed from your body, your church is going to bring you meals, and they're going to send you cards saying get better soon. But if you have something that goes on and on and on and is a chronic problem, your church gets tired. And they do not provide a very good sense of community when they get tired, because they think you should be over it, because they were over it. And that's a problem. So I want to begin with Genesis 3, verses 1 through 4, the idea of a sense of doubt. So now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Has God indeed said, 'You shall not eat of every tree of the garden'?" And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat the fruits of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, 'You shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die.'" Then the serpent said to the woman, "You will not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." So a lot of us have a sense of doubt. Has God indeed said? The whole point of the serpent's question was to ask Eve and Adam to descend on a path of doubting whether God really had their best interests in mind. Why did God ask them not to eat this fruit? Was God denying them the secret knowledge that they could get? And the Gnostics actually said the serpent was good. The serpent was leading them on the path of gnosis, the path of knowledge. There was something secret that this God was keeping from them. And we know that's a heresy. And the serpent gave several reasons for doubting God. First of all, he said that God was not correct when he said that they would surely die if they ate the fruit. Denying the harm of breaking the command was harmful to them. The second thing is that he said their eyes would be opened. There would be a level of wisdom gained by eating the fruit that they could not gain in any other way. A benefit of breaking the command was special knowledge. And then the last thing was that they would be like God. So special power. Their status would become like divinity, greater than what it was currently. And so Adam and Eve, we know, chose to break the command. They wanted knowledge, they wanted power, and they believed that God did not have their best interests in mind. And if Adam and Eve doubted God, who really did have their best interests in mind, can we understand why people might doubt Big Pharma and say, you know, those people there are more interested in making money than they are health? And we can understand that. That doesn't mean that they're right in all the things they say. I'd like to move on to thinking a little bit about false prophets. So I think about King Ahab and King Jehoshaphat going to a large group of prophets in 1 Kings chapter 22. And they were getting ready to launch a war with Syria, and they wanted input on whether or not they'd be victorious. And in that passage, the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, about 400 men, and said to them, "Shall I go up against Ramoth Gilead to fight, or shall I refrain?" So they said, "Go up, for the Lord will deliver it into the hand of the king." And these were 400 prophets. They claimed to have truth, and they were wrong. And Jehoshaphat wasn't satisfied. He asked Ahab, "Isn't there another prophet, a prophet of the Lord, that I can talk to before we go out to battle?" King Ahab said, "Yes, there was." He said, "But I hate this prophet because he always says the things I don't want to hear." Maybe sometimes we need people in our lives who tell us things we don't want to hear. Anyway, so they brought the prophet Micaiah out, and he prophesied about King Ahab, and he said, "You are going to die, and the dogs will lick up your blood." And he was in direct contradiction of the other 400 prophets. And he was right, and they were wrong. So what are some qualities we see here of false prophets? Well, first of all, they may outnumber the true prophets. They are certain of the truth that they are sharing. So one of the prophets came and said, "You know, that's, you know, you're wrong, Micaiah." And he said, "No, not wrong." So they are not swayed by others' opinions, and they preach to the choir. So I think it's really important to remember that many false prophets have a goal to share information that allows people to continue doing whatever they are already doing. And I think Matthew mentioned this a little bit. So during COVID, people shared that COVID wasn't bad, masks were terrible, doctors were falsifying COVID diagnosis on death certificates, and community shutdowns did little to help control COVID. The question to me wasn't whether they were right, but what was their goal? Their goal was to let people continue doing whatever they were already doing and feel good about it. And that's what we don't need to have in our lives. So someone who speaks at anti-vaccine rallies is not going to be able to share anything that's pro-vaccine because they won't get paid to go to those rallies. So false prophets often ask people to do things that they are not willing to do themselves. So I think it's important to remember that false prophets are sometimes right. They sometimes will predict something that does happen. So blind squirrels find nuts, right? Just not as often as squirrels who have eyes that work. So they are quick to point out the problems with the established medical systems, and those are many. They don't necessarily have a good replacement for those things. And they often have a significant profit motive associated with the messages that they share. So some of the people who share these things have websites that they sell supplements and other things that are worth millions of dollars to them. So I think it's important for us to remember that the medical establishment isn't perfect, and it has a history of being slow to adopt things that would have given its patients significant benefit. So say the bad old days. So are things getting better? Well, maybe gradually. There was a time when if you went to the doctor, you actually did worse than if you just stayed at home, okay? I thought about George Washington, and I'm not gonna share his story with you all, but you know, he got epiglottitis and they bled him 3 different times. And why did they do this? Well, it's because they believed that sickness was because of imbalance of bile in your body. If you could just let enough of the bad stuff out, then it would just come back into balance. Well, you know, did everybody die who got bled? No, I mean, some people actually survived. And the people who survived were the ones who were strong enough to survive, and the people who didn't survive, well, if they'd just been bled more and more time, they might have made it, but they just couldn't do it. So experience is the thing that lets you make the same mistakes with a whole lot more confidence. Remember that, okay? Experience is a thing that lets you make the same mistakes with much more confidence. So if you screwed up the last time, but it turned out okay, you're going to have a greater tendency to screw up again. There's a book called The Destiny of the Republic, and it's a book about the assassination of James Garfield. It's a really good book. And the interesting thing about James Garfield, he was a president who got shot, and he survived for around 80 days after he got shot. And during this time, his doctor and other people probed in his wound with their fingers. Didn't wash their hands, didn't use gloves, nothing. They just stuck their fingers in there trying to find the bullet. Over and over again. And he died not because of the bullet, but because of the abscesses that just filled his gut. And he became unable to eat, he lost tons of weight, and then he finally died. And he finally asked them to just stop doing it. He could basically call in hospice without hospice. And the thing was that in Europe, Dr. Lister had come up with the idea that germs caused infections. And he said, you know, if you just start cleansing your hands, particularly with childbirth, your patients will do better. He showed that they did better, and the Americans said, you know what? Dr. Lister is crazy. If we start putting antiseptic agents on, around wounds, it's going to delay healing. There's bad things are going to happen. And so they didn't do it. Well, we know that it turns out that Dr. Lister was right. So it's possible if the doctors had just ignored the wound, had just said, you know, we're going to feed you, and we're not going to stick our fingers in there, and we'll see what happens. He wouldn't still be alive today because that was back in the 1880s, but he would have survived a little longer. Maybe he made it to the end of his presidency. So my patients do some interesting things to stay healthy. So I had a teenage young man who came in with an abscess in his buttock area. And his mother shared with me that she'd been trying to treat it for the last week. I said, oh, really? I thought maybe she had some antibiotics in the cupboard, because a lot of my patients don't finish their antibiotics and then they keep them for, you know, emergency situations. So anyway, I said, oh, so what are you doing? Well, it turns out she was cutting up raw potatoes and she was taping them between his buttocks. And I don't know why she thought this would help the situation. I didn't know why he was letting her do this. It just seemed like he was... I would not have let my mother do that to me. But anyway, so I think she believed that she kept him from getting really sick, so what did I do? Well, I opened the area and I prescribed him antibiotics. And I didn't say anything about the potato. If he wanted to let her keep doing that, that's fine. But as long as he was willing to let me do the stuff that was important, that's okay. I remember another patient who came in to see me. He'd been coughing probably almost as long as Ryan. And he smelled really bad. And he said to me, he said, Doc, I've been trying to keep this at bay. And I was like, well, how are you keeping it at bay? Well, he hadn't taken a bath for a week. And his mother always said you should never take a bath or a shower when you are sick with a respiratory illness. And so I said, well, you know, what do we do about an antibiotic and you start showering again? So I'm sure his family appreciated that. You know, they had to live with him. I just had to see him for a few minutes. So I think it's really important to realize that none of these people, the people who believed in bloodletting or people who stopped bathing when they got sick, thought they were doing something harmful. There are a lot of sincere people out there peddling false information, but they're doing it in a way that convinces people that what they are selling is true. So some of the people are trying to make money off a scheme, but most of them are just repeating something they've heard. So, of course, the medical establishment jumps to things pretty quickly, too. So aspirin has been around for a little while, right? There's a guy named Bayer in Germany who came up with it. But if you look back to the time of Jesus, there were people who were chewing on willow bark because willow bark has salicylic acid in it. And that's kind of hard on your stomach. So Bayer was the one who stuck an acetyl group on it and makes it tolerable. So we said, you know what? aspirin's good. It prevents heart problems and it prevents strokes and colon polyps, you know, just everybody should start taking a baby aspirin. Well, it turns out if you're a low-risk person, you probably shouldn't, because you bleed more. You get stomach ulcers and things like that. And it's only people who've had a stroke or heart problems or have a stent who should take aspirin on a routine basis. And so things change, right? So I thought about this whole situation a lot during COVID. And probably if I polled all the people in this room, I would find different impressions about the effectiveness of government policies around things like social distancing, masking, vaccines, whatever. But what I found was that what people posted on social media had more to do with their ideas of what they wanted to be true than what was true. Okay, and I actually got off social media because I read the book The Anxious Generation, and I just felt really anxious after that. So if you all are on social media, that's fine, but I just felt like I got way more negativity in my life from social media than I got anything positive. So maybe it's because I just don't have any, I didn't need a community of people there. So we talk about an echo chamber. Algorithms on the internet tend to point us in directions that we're already pointed in. And this is dangerous for a number of reasons, but the biggest one is that it means that we have to work hard to find opinions that differ from our own. So a general approach to misinformation. So I'm just going to try to share some things. What happens when somebody comes to you and they're just really against vaccines? Or somebody just mentioned they believe that they should start giving their kids nebulized hydrogen peroxide. Or you know, something else that you just feel like, you know, this is just really, you know, not good. So first of all, I think we should listen to them. So remember that most of the time they are not coming up with the information they're sharing. They are repeating something. It might have been a Facebook post, an article from a semi-reputable site or a disreputable site, but they've been convinced by somebody else. So James 1:19 says, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath." So we should be slow to open our mouth and definitely slow to get angry. And too often in these kinds of situations, we spend too much time talking and not enough time listening. The point is not simply to listen in such a way that we're tallying up the points where they're wrong and try to shoot them down, but rather to hear what is going on behind their opinion. What is it they're trying to convince themselves about in order to that this disbelief is helping them in. So there's a quote, I think it's from a movie maybe, but it says, "Now you're looking for the secret, but you won't find it because, of course, you're not really looking. You don't really want to know. You want to be fooled." So why do people want to be fooled? Sometimes it's because they or someone they care for has been hurt by the medical establishment, and sometimes it's because the person selling them snake oil has gotten them to invest enough in that they believe it has to be right. So people seldom admit when they're wrong, even when they change opinions. There was a book written called When Prophecy Fails. It was written about a group called the Seekers. This was led by a lady by the name of Dorothy Martin, who claimed that she had received special information from aliens on a planet called Clarion, that large portions of the Earth would be destroyed by flooding before dawn on December the 21st, 1954. The aliens apparently told Dorothy Martin that they would pick up the group sometime early in the morning on December the 21st, just before the cataclysm happened. And a group of psychologists wondered how the group would respond when the prophecy didn't come to pass. And I wonder how those psychologists knew that this prophecy wasn't going to happen. Maybe they were prophets. And when the aliens didn't show up, Ms. Martin told the group that the cataclysm had been averted by the light that the group had shed on the world around them, and that they had saved the world. So the cult members who were not very invested in this left the group. They were done with it. The people who were really invested doubled down. they held even tighter in their belief that Dorothy Martin was a prophetess. And I bring this up because I think the more somebody invests in something, invests themselves in a belief, the harder it is for them to relinquish that belief. So people want hope. And if the medical establishment doesn't give that to them, they will look elsewhere for it. So there's some other reasons too. Some people have been hurt by the medical establishment. Some people don't have hope. They have a kind of cancer that the oncologists say is untreatable. So they go to Mexico where somebody says, you know, I can treat that. Whether or not they can, they certainly will take their money. They believe that there's something intrinsically unethical about using a standard treatment course. They believe that the natural remedies have fewer side effects, are cheaper, or are sold by people who aren't interested in making money, unlike doctors and pharmaceutical companies. And maybe there's some truth in this last thing, which is that standard treatments overpromise and underdeliver. So you can spend a lot of money on a standard treatment and get minimal results. So if you can understand why people want to believe what they do, you'll be able to address it better. So somebody who has been through a terrible situation where a doctor has misdiagnosed them or given them a treatment that gave them terrible side effects is going to leave scars behind and make them less willing to accept what somebody else says. And this is a bunny trail, but I think when we think about the reasons why people leave a church community, the same thing is true. The point is very seldom that somebody leaves a church setting because they have suddenly ceased to believe in the resurrection of Jesus or something like that. But it often is that they did not feel loved in their church community and they felt like their church was not responding well to them in some kind of situation. If you can understand their pain and minister in love to them, it will help so much more than if you go over with apologetics and argue them about the veracity of Scripture. So I think my experience was that people who knew me during COVID were much more willing to listen to my opinion than people who had no connection with me other than seeing something that I would post on social media. So I think we need to admit when we are wrong or the experts were wrong. So James 5:16 says, confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that she may be healed. And I'm taking this verse out of context and I'll admit that. But the problem is that we aren't perfect. And churches are not places for perfect people to gather, but sinners who are striving to be like a perfect master. I cannot tell you how many times I heard people say that the CDC said initially that masks weren't helpful, and then they changed their mind, and they identify this thing as they're just wrong. And maybe it's better just to say up front, you know, I said this, and it turns out I wasn't correct. So maybe a corollary to this is being willing to admit uncertainty. I have no problem telling my patients that I don't know something. And I hope that they appreciate that I will try to get to them to somebody who's smarter than I am. But it's hard work to be somebody who knows everything about everything. And it's even harder to live with somebody like that. Okay, if you've ever known somebody who believed that they knew everything, they argue with you all the time. And it's a challenge because they can't really learn. Even if they were wrong in the past, they're seldom able to admit it. So I will mention that I'm often frustrated with the reverse situation. There was a Facebook post that I saw that claimed that all vaccinated people will die within 2 years. Nobel laureate Luc Montagnier has confirmed that there is no chance of survival for people who have received any form of vaccine In the shocking interview, the world's leading virologist stated bluntly, there is no hope and no possible treatment for those who have already been vaccinated. We must be prepared to cremate the bodies. Now, it turns out this quote was made up. But I saw multiple people share this more than 2 years ago. But I never saw anybody post an apology when 2 years rolled around and all these people didn't get cremated, which I was glad about, you know. I think we should attempt to agree with somebody's viewpoints where we're able. So if you're able to say a couple things that you've heard them say that you don't have a problem with, that is helpful. Even start off with those things. Say, you know, I heard you say this and this and this, and I agree with those things. The goal is not to create some kind of antagonistic scenario where you are beating them up and tearing their opinions down. If you can create some sort of commonality, that's a good thing. If you've ever read the book Crucial Conversations, the authors make the point in the book that if you can get people to see that your goal is similar to their goal, you want health and they want health, that's a good thing. And this is going to be easier when you're in person than over social media. I think we need to realize that we tend to share things that align with our points of view, things that we liked or clicked on tend to show up in our feed in the future. So there are times when I'm preaching a sermon and I come to an illustration, and I know this illustration probably isn't true, but I like the illustration, so I go ahead and use it. It's just like, well, this quote from C.S. Lewis sounds like a nice quote. I don't think it sounds like something he would have said, but anyway, I'll just use it because it goes well with what I'm sharing. I actually try not to do that, but there's all sorts of stories out there of people, you know, they just tell this whole long story, and then you Google it afterwards, you're like, that just was made up, you know, that's not a real thing. So somebody mentioned, well, I had just mentioned the anxious generation. Jonathan Haidt, who wrote that book, also wrote a book called The Righteous Mind. And he gives the illustration in that book of an elephant and a rider. So Jonathan Haidt says that people believe that they are in control of their minds. And it's more like somebody on top of an elephant trying to direct the elephant where to go. So more often than not, we decide what we want to believe and then we come up with reasons to explain that. So humans are not nearly as rational as they think they are. Most of the time, our subconscious is coming up with something and then we explain it to other people in ways that try to make it sound like we've thought it through. This is true for other people, but it's true for us too. So I really like to focus on healthy behavior. So there is a disconnect between knowledge and behavior. People know what healthy living and exercise programs look like, but they do not follow them. And so somebody who comes in to see me, whose A1C is 8.5, and really needs to start on diabetes medicines and says, is there any way I can not take diabetes medicines? I will say, yes, but you're going to have to put out a lot of effort. If you can take off 35 pounds and if you can limit the amount of carbohydrates you take each day to 50 grams or less, you probably can avoid diabetes medicine for a while. But I don't know that you can do that. And very few people will argue that healthy lifestyles are a bad idea. They just don't have the willpower to do them. Same thing with cholesterol. People hate cholesterol medicines. They hate them with a passion. They're convinced that statins take your mind away. They give you dementia. They make your muscles hurt. They give you headaches. I'm not sure what all the things they do. Whether or not they make you live longer, they're not sure, but they're convinced that if you're taking one on a routine basis, it doesn't matter how long you live, it's gonna seem like a million years. And so when I'm talking to somebody about cholesterol medicine, how hard I'm gonna push on them. Okay, so I probably should have said at the beginning, so I'm a family doctor. And so all this stuff is coming from a standpoint as somebody who has a relationship with patients. I'm going to share a little bit more about that in my second talk. But how hard I push on them to take cholesterol medicines is going to depend on what their cholesterol is. So somebody's cholesterol is 201 and their LDL is 112 and their HDL is okay. I'm going to say, you know, I just would really like you to eat a little better. Your cholesterol is on the high side. We'll watch it. If it goes up more, I may ask you to think about cholesterol medicine, but I'm not going to push on you really hard. On the other hand, if their cholesterol is 400 and their LDL is 300, I'm going to say, you know, I think you're at extremely high risk for having a heart attack, and we really need to do whatever we can to bring your cholesterol down because you're going to die very young and your family is going to miss you. You'll be with Jesus, but they won't be, and that separation is going to be hard. So, and some of them will take that, and some of them are like, well, whatever, doc, you know. It's not even like those are so expensive. So I try to evaluate as well what the people are doing. So if my patient wants to tape a potato to his boil, as long as he's willing to let me drain it and put him on some antibiotic, I'm okay with it. And I don't know about you, but I hate arguments. I don't like controversial things. I find that somehow when I'm talking to somebody, I may agree with 94.6% of what they say, and they're going to focus on that last 5.4%. And it can just really create a lot of argument. And I don't like arguments. Speak the truth in love. Ephesians 4:14-16 says that we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting, but speaking the truth in love may grow up in all things into him who is the head, Christ, from whom the whole body joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. And I do think it's important that we speak the truth, but we need to be careful how we share that truth, isn't it? So it's important we do it in a loving way. This means that when we share information, we are not trying to make the other person feel bad, but to understand that we're sharing this because we care, because we love them. So if somebody is trying to give their children hydrogen peroxide, and you say, you know, this is really hard for me to share, but I care about you, and I care about your children, and I am really concerned that doing this is going to harm their health. And I don't know if you can hear that coming from me, but that's why I'm sharing this. Maybe that will make a difference. So even then, people have a difficult time hearing it because they are so invested in what they're doing. It is hard for them to admit that what they're doing doesn't have validity. Maybe they've been doing this for years, and their experience teaches them that you're wrong. So there is a concept of cognitive dissonance. It's the idea that if you buy something that's really expensive, you are going to explain why you spent more for what you did than buying something cheaper. There's quality there. There's something about that you got that you wouldn't have got if you had spent less money. So love does heal a multitude of wounds. And if we have relationship, if people see us as loving them, even if we're sharing a perspective that is different from theirs, they will hear it better. So just to kind of wrap things up, so much of life revolves around relationship. There's no substitute for that. If we have a relationship with someone, if we can develop that relationship, even at a short period of time, we will far more be able to have a real discussion about it than just kind of lobbing grenades at somebody else. And we need to be willing to step away from a discussion if we're feeling flooded by it. If we are getting upset, if our voice is going up, if we're getting really angry at the other person, it is perfectly reasonable to say, you know, I don't feel like I'm changing your mind. And honestly, you're not changing my mind either, but I'm getting upset. And that's not where I want to be because I care about you. Can we table this discussion and bring it up at a later date? or not bring it up at all if it's not that important. So people view things as life and death. I often hear this about like fetal cell lines. I'm against fetal cell lines. But an awful lot of new treatments are tested using those fetal cell lines. And I found that people tend to investigate this a lot with something they don't want to take, and then when it's a treatment that they want to use, they don't look real hard. And so we just understand that's the way that people are. And I was thinking about this just kind of as an illustration at the end. Sometimes these discussions are a little bit like baking cookies. Maybe that sounds weird. But you can have all the ingredients there. You've got the truth. You've got your chocolate chips, and you've got your flour, and you've got your butter, and you've got your sugar and vanilla and eggs and all the things that are perfect. And you scoop them out, and you put them on your cookie tray, and you shove it in the oven, and you turn the temperature up to 600 degrees, and you leave it for 20 minutes. And what you have, the livestock won't eat. And if we are able to turn down the heat, to develop relationship, pour some love on it, people may be able to hear us. But as long as we leave that heat turned all the way up, they're never going to be able to hear all the truth that we are pouring on them. So